Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, it is our annual Summer Entertainment Awards, where we discuss the best we saw in film and television over this past summer. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hosts, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing today?
Wonderful. Troy Heinrichs.
Yay, award season's here.
And Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Hey. Amanda Sink still works here sometimes.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Part-timer.
She won the award for the best part-timer. I was going to say, this is also the only award show you're going to get this entire year because the Emmys and Oscars are delayed.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. Yeah. That's disappointing. Emmys are, what, January, right?
January? Currently, yes.
The dang Oscars are inconvenient.
Otherwise, none of the actors would be able to show up because they'd all be on strike.
Something like that.
Nobody's going to watch a show where it's just a ghost town.
I don't know how they're going to do Emmys during football playoffs, but sure.
They'll find a way. Not everybody cares about football, Troy.
Most of America does.
They care about the halftime shows usually, though, which Taylor Swift declined.
Because she can.
Yeah, she'll also be in the middle of her second leg of tour.
Yeah, she's got shit to do.
She's got money to rake in.
She made like $1 billion. She's doing fine.
She like paid out $1 billion or something.
She's re-releasing all of her albums now the way she wanted them to be done in the first place.
Genius. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's thehollywoodoutsider.com. We have a Facebook group called The Hollywood Outsider. We're on X at Buy Popcorn, and we're on Threads at The Hollywood Outsider. And we're taking a couple weeks off after this, so enjoy this extravaganza episode. Now, let's go to some summer fun facts. You guys ready? You want to hear some fun facts about the summer?
Yeah. I mean, I've been waiting all day for this.
I got one that school starts in the freaking middle of August. What the hell's up with that?
What does it have to do with anything I'm talking about?
It ruins summer because the kids can't go to the movies in the last 2 weeks of August because they're back in school already.
Isn't that better for you? It means you can go by yourself.
I've always go by myself, though.
You just said...
Then what are you bitching about?
I don't understand the argument, then.
I'm trying to help the box office out. There's less people that can go.
Well, how's it going to help if they're not? If your kids don't even go?
The kids go. They just don't go with me.
I don't understand the argument.
They go with each other. They go with their friends.
Oh.
In mass. Doubles, triples, quadruples.
Okay.
He's voicing concerns on behalf of others that don't pertain to
him. It doesn't sound like Troy. That's why I was confused.
I go to the movie by myself all the time.
You mean caring about others?
Yeah, kind of.
I'm just kidding.
All right. So here's some fun facts. So Barbenheimer, you know, that whole juggernaut that became
Barbenheimer
a thing.
Or Barbieheimer?
I'm so glad he finally got it right. Don't bring it back up. Just let him go with it.
Whichever way you prefer. It will, when all is said and done, will have hit $2 billion.
That's insane.
Between the two movies worldwide.
Jinx, you owe me a Coke.
Okay, you got it. I'll get you one from McDonald's.
Ooh, best kind.
Can we talk about this real quick? Like, who, and it's rhetorical because no one did.
Yeah, no one. That's why I asked the question.
Who predicted that this would be a thing? Where I just want to point out, like, at some point, there were actually fan-made posters where they had Barbie looking on joyfully.
They were super cool.
Were they at a nuclear blast that, you know, led to the deaths of thousands of people?
She's interested in historical events, Aaron. She's knowledgeable. This was history, Barbie, that was in that picture.
Okay.
It was a targeted explosion to not kill the horses. Okay.
Just a weird thing to connect. I mean, God bless the internet for making it happen, but it's a weird thing to connect.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Man, and Tom Cruise, boy, I bet he's mad about supporting that. Like, shit. Everybody stopped coming to my movie and went to Barbie.
Poor guy.
He's gonna be doing okay.
Yeah.
I still think people didn't go to his movie because they knew it was a two-parter.
I don't believe that at all. Actually.
Because like Spider-Verse, you didn't know Spider-Verse was going to be a two-parter, so people went and saw Spider-Verse.
No, I don't think so, man.
Dune didn't have that problem.
Yeah, Dune didn't do well, period.
Dune didn't get released in the theater, did it?
Yeah, it did.
Barely. Mm-hmm.
It was Max. It was like a Max. 30 day. It was a Max. No, it was Max.
It was a day and date.
It was a day and date, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't see it in the theater. I watched it at home.
But again, people still watched it.
I went and saw it in a theater, and I wish I could
you
take it back.
You saw the first one, so.
Yeah. I'd like that time back if I could. That would be great. No, I think if you go look at the history of Mission Impossible movies, they always have great legs. They open around 60, 80 million domestic, and then it goes from there, and they have a lot more overseas, and it continues to grow. This one didn't happen. This is the best reviewed one, I think, since the first movie, and I would say is the best movie since the first movie out of that series. And it didn't carry, they didn't have the legs, because Barbie and Oppenheimer sucked all the venom up.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The crowd that was going to the Mission Impossible when I went to go see it were most of the octogenarians were there. There was no kids. It was just old people.
Just old people. Like all 80-year-olds? Is that what you're saying?
You had the Clint Eastwood audience?
That's exactly who was there. Just the Clint Eastwood audience.
Okay. Get off my lawn.
You know, my kids are under 20. And they wouldn't have grown up with the Mission Impossible franchise because they would have just been able to see it, you know, within the last 3 years. So, of course, they're going to go see the shiny new thing that they're seeing on Snapchat, Instagram, X, Threads, etc.
And it was made a thing. I mean, it was a viral thing. Let's all go see those two movies in the same day. And they're definitely not going to see three. I mean, my God, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. You know, the same sort of thing happened in a way for Minions because there you had all these Yeah, when Minions came out, the Minions movie came out.
That's right. There was like a viral thing.
There was a whole viral thing with frat boys who were going to go see it dressed up as Minions and whatnot. So, yeah, that was the same dig.
Didn't understand that one either.
Which goes back to the whole, like, why the studios are holding out, because they don't actually need the stars to promote the movies because everybody's doing it for them for free.
I mean, it seems like better promotion.
Yep.
Damn. Okay, other fun facts. The Sound of Freedom is the biggest indie hit of the summer, and it's the biggest overall hit percentage-wise, because it was like a $50 million budget, and it's, you know, nearing $200 million.
Percentage-wise, meaning ratio
profit,
to theaters?
Ratio profit to spend.
To gross, okay. Yeah. Crazy. Crazy! And people still want to try and make it like a right-wing thing, just because the actor is right-wing. The poor director is just like, man, I put my heart and soul into this. Will you guys please stop trying to make it political? It's not. Kids being kidnapped, bad. That's the whole point.
It's bad for everyone. Not yep. good. Not a good thing.
Mission Impossible 7 will lose money. Indiana Jones 5 will lose money. Haunted Mansion will lose money. And The Flash lost all the money. So none of those were really technically hits.
All the money.
It did, man.
They went negative. They're like, we got to pay, actually, now.
They did go negative. Yep.
They're like, Barry, could you go run around a few more times so we can make a few more bucks?
I got my check in the mail from them.
No, you didn't. I guarantee it. They're in the hole.
Nobody's getting a check in the mail from them.
That's what I'm saying. They had to pay me to go see it.
Here's one that Trey will be happy about. Elemental, which we talked about at the beginning, the beginning of summer, June, when it came out, about, like, because it was a big flop when it opened. It did somehow eke out a win worldwide. It has actually made almost $500 million worldwide, if you can believe it. All
right, well, there you go.
And still not streaming yet. You can buy it, but you can't stream it yet.
Right, but it's a win, right? So Pixar
gonna
win. I swear
I thought you were going to do an advertisement, Troy.
I thought it was too.
Yeah. It was like, do not.
Buy it now on Blu-ray and digital before Blu-rays are gone.
Blue Beetle had a smaller budget, but it should break even. The Meg 2 is actually, you know, some people are saying, well, it's a flop domestically. Yep. Made a killing overseas. Overseas, it's huge.
One of the best jokes on the movie poster, though, that I've seen in a long time.
Which is what?
It was like, same shark, old chum. I was
like, there's a great chum joke in the movie, man. Great chum joke in the movie.
So funny.
And it's a fun movie. People wish more people should go see it. But it's doing great overseas. So there's a chance they make a Meg 3. You just don't know. And Transformers did really well overseas, too.
Nice.
What did do very well, comedies, did not do good at all. No Hard Feelings was a good movie, but it only did okay. Joyride was a flop. Strays was a flop. The Machine was a flop. So comedies did not do well.
I did predict those three, by the way. Or four. And No Hard Feelings would be the best one.
You want a Comet cookie or something?
Out of that set.
Comet Town, Troy.
Hey, guys, I just want to derail the show for 5 seconds. Just to let you know, I was right. I called that. I was right. Yeah.
Totally called that.
It's going to be on Strays his gravestone.
Stupid.
Yeah. Let's see. Actors haven't been able to promote movies and TV shows since the strike started, but I kind of want to ask, because we talked about that for a second. Does that affect any of your interest whatsoever in seeing something?
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's not having an effect on whether I'm going to see anything for me. So, yeah, no.
There's the moral side of me that says I should stand with them and also strike. And then there's the other side of me that says I don't even have time to watch this shit anyway. So
the moral side of me?
Yeah, the one who's like, let me support them in their workforce endeavor.
Mm. Let me ask you, you think they're going to support you like in your workforce endeavors?
No, okay. No.
I'm just
also wasn't the same. Question. Like the question was, do you support the actors and what they want? I say absolutely yes.
Yeah. My question was, does it matter whether they do publicity, whatever the reason is, does their promotion make you care or not care about seeing?
Oh, I misunderstood that. Okay.
Assuming they were working and assuming they were promoting the movie,
would that make a difference? It does not make any difference whatsoever.
You know what? Yes. Yes. But unintentionally, it's because it drives more conversation. There's usually like some funny clip on the internet of them talking about it or just the actor in general. But what it does for me is it draws me more often to that actor mm-hmm. and wanting to support their work than it does the movie itself. But inadvertently, yes, it'll make me more inclined to go check it out.
Okay. Spider-Verse, Guardians 3, Little Mermaid, Fast X or Fast 10, Talk to Me, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. These were all hit movies. So there were a lot of hit movies this summer. People went to the theater. They were starting to get back to the theater, which is, you know, nice for movie theaters. And then, of course, everybody went on strike. Good plan.
Well, it's at least exciting that we're starting to see that trend move upward again.
It is. Sure. All right. Now we're going to move on to our Summer Entertainment Awards. Now, this is how we're going to do our awards. We do like a big overall show at the end of the year where we break everything into film and TV. For summer, for most of the categories, we're actually just going to do it movies or TV. There wasn't a ton of TV that was speaking to people, and there wasn't, you know, I think people kind of went one way or the other for most of the time. They went movies or they went TV, and we just combined the two. What the hell? So, these are the categories that are going to be for both. So when you're picking, you can pick for a film or a television show. It doesn't matter what. Understood?
Rules accepted.
Okay. Roger, Dodger.
We've got an order, which means nobody talk over the other person. Let them have their answers. Okay? Okay. So the first category is best team up or ensemble. That's two or more actors that captivated you. You think that's the best of the best. Of the best of summer from May 1st through Labor Day. Go.
All right. So this is the Barbie cast where we have America, Margot, and Ryan in there.
Are you on a first name basis mixture? With these people?
I am. America, yeah, we just hung out last weekend. But I feel like they each had their own contribution to the film and it was exceptional. And they had such chemistry and energy with each other, hands down.
So Barbie, the cast of Barbie?
Barbie.
Okay.
That's just ditto.
Ditto.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, love it.
America Ferrera and Margot together are better. Margot and Ryan together are better. I don't know if Ryan and America Ferrera really had much scene time together from what I remember.
Like one scene, I think.
Yeah. But Margot and Ryan, definitely when they were in the real world, I thought that was amazing to watch. And then obviously Margot and America Ferrera when they were coming back into Barbie Land from the real world. And that whole transition sequence of that was really great.
John, you going to go for Barbie too?
No, I'm not going to go for Barbie too. I'm going to go for the Autobots and Maximals from Transformers Rise of the Beast. I really loved. What?
Nothing. Of course what? You would.
Why is my choice wrong?
It's his award. It's his award.
It is your award. I'm just like, you're the Transformers guy, so I'm not surprised. That's all.
It was a good time. And you know what? I really love seeing my favorite Autobots, be on the big screen and my favorite Maximals. It was really great. I liked seeing Optimus Prime and Optimus Primal. The whole thing was just a blast for me. So that's why I'm picking it.
Fair enough. Mine is Harrison Ford and Phoebe Waller-Bridge as Indiana Jones and Helena Shaw.
That's a great pick.
I'm very bummed that people jumped on board very, very early to trash the movie before anyone had seen it because of the response out of Cannes. But once people actually got to see it, people were praising it because I think you really get a nice, it's amazing how much better of a relationship Indy has here with Helena Shaw than he did with his own stupid son, Mutt Lange, because these two just have a good chemistry. It's very easy chemistry. And it also, there's a lot of, is she with Indy? Is she against Indy? Who is she? Which side is she playing? And as they come to the end of the movie, there's like an emotional arc that I think is really beautiful. So even though I know some people might not have went out to see the Indiana Jones movie because they heard bad things, the movie is great. It legitimately is great. Love their chemistry. All right. Next category is best reinvention of a cliche. Now that means basically whatever you think it means.
Okay. That's vague. So
doing something that's been done to death and somebody made it fresh. There you go.
Yeah. I took this and interpreted it with that, but also something that felt, this cliche felt more natural and didn't feel like I was just going through this same experience all over again. So I have kind of a trouble with some films that like to do the transition between black and white and color when they're trying to relay it when it comes to time. Mm-hmm. But Oppenheimer, I thought, did a phenomenal job in the transitions. And I could not believe it. There were moments where, like, I couldn't remember if I had just seen it in black and white or color, because it just felt like it was a natural progression and we're just, it didn't feel choppy and it was just really well designed.
I liked it better when it was done called JFK, but I got it.
Fair enough.
Hey, don't get me wrong. I think the movie's good, but I've seen so many people like just praising that whole aspect. And I'm like, you know, like Oliver Stone did this first. I'm just letting you know, Chris Nolan wasn't the first one to do this, but
yeah.
Now you saw it in 70 millimeter. You're the only person here that's seen it in true 70 millimeter. Is it does it feel any different for you?
I mean, obviously I'd have to compare it against, but I was looking at some comparison photos of like different scenes that you could see how they were traditionally viewed in like 35 millimeter and what it looked like in the 70 millimeter IMAX. Cause I saw it with that component also. Mm-hmm. And you just get so much more out of every scene. It's insane. Like it draws you in on a deeper level. You've been to a 70 millimeter before, but that experience still isn't the same as like a 70 millimeter IMAX. So that was very unique.
That's interesting. It's like 600 pounds of film.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the most pretentious way I could think of to distribute a movie. Like Christopher Nolan's just sitting around going, what is the most complicated way I can make my movie get out there? I want people to carry reels and reels and reels of film up a goddamn staircase because it's movie. It's cinema.
It was magical, though. Like, It actually was. Okay. Like, there was a couple moments where I got goosebumps because it was – it's also because we've had digital for so long now. Because of all those poor people
pulling their back out while they're trying to walk this freaking cancer up.
All the safety injuries. OSHA's on site now at movie theaters. But there's a magic, I feel, to authentic film being shown versus digital. And because we've made this transition, it was a pretty slow and yet progressive – change that we made to full digital, but there's just that.
It's that grainy, real. Yeah, you're texture. Missing.
It's like almost like an intimacy with the movie. And there was actually one part in the film where you could see, and it's on the biggest screen imaginable, you could see this tiny little hair that was clearly on there and being projected forward, and you could see it moving with each, you know, each second. It was really, really cool. I was like, it's not even annoying. It's just like, damn, I've kind of missed that.
It wasn't like a nipple hair or anything gross, was it?
Hopefully. Okay. Hopefully.
All right. Who's next? Troy.
Total setup, because my cliche is the gratuitous sex scene that is absolutely not needed in the movie, but put in just to actually get eyeballs to come look at it. And this goes to Oppenheimer for when Emily Blunt is actually envisioning Florence Pugh having sex with Cillian Murphy while they're at the interview room conference table. I thought that scene was so well done, but yet at the same time, so not needed. Because it's like,
yeah,
like he's sitting there clothed. Emily Blunt is, everybody's clothed except for Florence Pugh, where she is truly naked and literally grinding on him. And you're just like, what is this going on? But Emily Blunt's, you know, emotion that she's feeling, because you're in the mind of Emily Blunt's character at that moment, in Kitty's mind, and it just works so well. So yeah, I would give it to Oppenheimer's necessary gratuitous sex scene.
That's a good one, because I very much, there's a lot of movies and shows where I'm like, this isn't really needed, but the use of it in Oppenheimer was at least to convey someone's perception of like what they're seeing in their head or thinking about as they're watching this story or listening to this story unfold. So I think that was a really good pick.
I didn't think it was necessary at all, but as long as you did, that's what matters. It was your pick. John, do you got any sex scenes you want to throw in here?
No, but closely related to a sex scene, the point in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, where Peter Quill confesses his feelings to Gamora and completely screws it up because he's telling everybody what the feelings are as opposed to just her. And they all have an argument over the whole thing of what button means what color suit you're talking to. I just love that scene. It's one of my favorite out of that whole movie.
That is a great scene. I do like that a lot. My pick is The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster. That's a horror movie that came out earlier this summer. It's a very independent film. I wish more people would find it. I love this movie. It's a really cool take on the Frankenstein motif. She basically is just reigniting the life of her brother who has passed away. And it just has a completely different take on it. And then it's just so well done. It's very clever. It's very creative. And it's intriguing. So I hope people find it. Best overall action sequence, overall, TV or film, you choose.
So I went with Heart of Stone, which is the new Netflix Gal Gadot movie.
I really like that movie. I wish more people would see it.
It was good. Yeah,
people are trashing like, it sucks. I'm like, I don't know what you saw, man. I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. But that opening, there's a huge kind of opening action sequence that Gal Gadot really gets in, and there's a lot of moving parts to it that feel like a huge blockbuster movie, but I'm watching it on Netflix. And there was some choreography in there where I was like, damn, that's really cool. I love the way they did that. And I don't want to speak too much on it just because it is so recent. But it was a lot of fun. There were a few moments in that sequence where I was like, dang, unexpected. Did not think that this was going to be fun like that.
Yeah, that one's, it's very Mission Impossible-y.
Yeah.
And which, you know what's surprising about that is between that and Extraction 2, there were actually two really awesome action flicks on streaming this year. Usually that's not the case. Good one. I like that one.
Mine was Indiana Jones and the entire opening castle sequence. Just the way they created the set and the bombasticness of it all. And it just felt like you were there the entire time, feeling the hanging from the rope and everything, and then trying to escape. Mm-hmm. I thought that entire opening sequence was probably one of the best indie opening sequences in a while.
That was great.
Minus the de-aging for me.
Why did that bother you so much? I don't know.
Oh, it was didn't bother me at all. Especially when he's running on the train, all I can think in that movie is like, I can just see him moving robotically like a video game character that's getting a little bit of lag and he's on Call of Duty or something.
Wow.
He's
getting some lag. That's some 80-year-old legs, man. It's not lag.
But he's supposed to be like 28 years old.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
Like they haven't used, I mean, they could have dug up River Phoenix for that, couldn't they?
Jesus, John.
All right, that's dark.
It's your pick.
It is my pick, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, so mine is in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the Spider-Man chase. That part was just so well executed. It was great to watch.
Oh, where all the Spider-Mans are chasing Spider-Man?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. It's such a great scene. You get to see the individual Spider-Mans they're bringing up and they made up so many of them too. I think my favorite was the Spider-Man horse. That kind of cracked me up. But yeah, that was a good scene to me.
That was fun. Very vibrant film. Mine is from Warrior season 3. I wish more people would find Warrior. It's on Max. Go watch all 3 seasons, but they have fantastic fight choreography, and I would actually choose the most recent episode, but because that would be a huge spoiler, I don't want to ruin that for anyone. But it's also from the same series. This would be really, really close anyway. But Assam, Youngjun, and Oljun basically take on a town of bandits. There's a moment where, if you haven't watched the show, Assam is a, which most people have not, but Assam is this character's martial artist who's kind of like trying to decide if he wants to be a savior for people or if he wants to just follow the gang mentality that he's become accustomed to in his life. And it's about early Chinese immigrants in America trying to find a place and da-da-da. So they end up trying to make a deal, blah, 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 and they're trying to leave, and they see that they're torturing children. And the other guys just want to leave because we got the deal, we got it done, let's get out of here. You know, it's not our problem, that whole thing. And he just can't make himself leave, even though he knows it's going to ruin a lot of things. And so the ensuing fight scene is fantastic. The choreography is fantastic. Andrew Koji, who plays Assam, is just spot on, pitch perfect. And it's just everything connected to that is just the movement is it's intense, man. It gets you involved. It was better than the train sequence, Mission Impossible. It's better to me than the opening to Indy, which I agree, Trey is a great pick. It's just, I just love the action choreography in that show. Fantastic. I wish more people would watch Warrior.
I've been wanting to.
It's not that hard. You just pull up Max and you find Warrior and you start watching it.
It's on my list, and I started 5 minutes and then I fell asleep because I tried watching it too late in the night.
You will see a difference in from seasons 1 and 2 to season 3 because seasons 1 and 2 were on Cinemax and then season 3 is just on Max.
So the budget?
No, the sex. There's a lot more nudity and sex in the first 2 seasons than there are in the most recent one.
That's funny.
Yeah. But still, great acting, great storytelling. Just a good show. Before we go on, I do have to talk about 1923, a Yellowstone origin story, which stars Academy Award winner Helen Mirren and Academy Award nominee Harrison Ford, and introduces a whole new generation of the Dutton family as they explore the early 20th century when pandemics, historic drought, the end of Prohibition, and the Great Depression all plagued the Mountain West, and the Duttons call it home. This release features all 8 episodes of season 1, plus over 2 hours of special features, including an extended making-of feature, powerful exploration of Tiona Rainwater's harrowing journey, and an exclusive sit-down with video editor Chad Galster. I gotta say, even though I have not caught up on Yellowstone proper, I have watched 1883 and 1923, both great shows. I absolutely recommend checking this out and picking this up. And season 1 is on DVD and Blu-ray right now. Most ridiculous moment. There you go. Have fun.
Well, I feel like there's only one, not just film, but franchise that every year needs to take this home. And that's going to be from the Fast and the Furious franchise. And it goes to Fast 10.
Okay. What's the moment?
Dom literally drives his car through flames, ignites his NOS or whatever that stuff is called.
NOS.
NOS. Thank you. And everything is unscathed. Like, even just the igniting of that didn't do anything. He's unharmed. His car's fine. Everything's fine. But he just drove through fire.
I mean, it seems like science.
And he was in there for a little bit.
Makes sense.
Like, the flames are all around you, my guy.
Probably didn't even sweat.
Probably not.
No, he's sweating the whole time. No, you can't say that. He sweats the whole time. He's got to, you know, he's got to keep up with the whole baby oil look that The Rock does.
The Rock isn't in this movie.
He's in the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Not really. No. Are you sure you watched it?
Yes, I know I watched it. He's in the last 5 minutes of the movie.
He's literally, I guess, he's in there.
I can't even argue on this. I have no memory. I don't know.
He's in the Rock just, shows up at
he's
the
in
very...
for like 30 seconds. I know where he's at. I'm just saying he's in there for like 30 seconds.
Okay.
It's not that long.
Why are you arguing with me then?
I don't know.
Because he's Aaron.
Because Jesus she was talking Christ. About she was talking about Dom in the car and you went to the Rock. It's got nothing to do with the Rock. That's all.
You said sweaty.
Just talking about his bald head and the baby oil and the competition between the Diesel and the Rock.
Okay.
That's all.
All right.
I hate you. I hate all you right. so much right now.
I'm sorry. You got to connect it better. Troy, what about you? Most ridiculous moment.
This one we'll switch over to the TV side of the house and talk about the master crafter, the warrior with words, the man who is so suave when it comes to putting down hijackers on an airplane. That is one Idris Elba, because it is ridiculous that we don't understand anything about this man and why he is even qualified to do this job, especially to help the terrorists at one point in time, because all we get in the entire show is one line that says that he was a skilled business negotiator very early on, but yet he's like MacGyver and he also is like a Navy SEAL, and it just, it's ridiculous what he's able to accomplish in this 6.5 hour hijacking.
And yet, you and John both loved this show.
I enjoyed it, yes.
It's thoroughly entertaining. It's stupid, but it's entertaining.
There have been plenty of times when I've gone, what the hell is he capable? Why him? Why him? And it doesn't make any sense other than the fact that he's Idris Elba and he looks damn good doing it.
Yep.
At some point, like, did the terrorists just stop listening to him? Why not? Why would they not just stop listening to him?
At some point they did, because, yes, it did happen.
Well, don't ruin it, shut up. Yeah, it's still kind of recent.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to know exactly what happens at the end and why it ties into Rabbit Hole, kind of, we'll give you the thing offline.
It doesn't tie into Rabbit Hole at all. It doesn't. That's just Troy's head. That's just Troy's head. It's Troy's head. It's not true.
There's no through line to actually hitting Rabbit Hole. You're right.
What's your pick, John? Most ridiculous moment.
You didn't watch Rabbit Hole yet, did you?
No, I did not. My pick, I just know it's not, because I know it's totally you going like, I am going to make this a thing whether the world wants it or not.
That's right.
Yep. So my pick is the Super Skrulls and Secret Invasion. They literally made two of the most powerful, not even like, there is no other match to these two characters in the Marvel Universe anymore. The Super Skrull's it. Whatever Gaia is it that there's no holding back. There's no, like, it's just dumb. It is dumb. I hate it. I didn't like it. I liked the character, but the way the how much they just overpowered her is ridiculous.
I haven't even watched it because I couldn't care less. I wanted to, though, because that's the one show I wanted to like. And then all I heard was negative things.
I enjoyed most of the show up until the very end. Like, most of the show is great, especially when Ben Mendelsohn is still around. It is a great buddy cop thing going on between Ben Mendelsohn and Sam Jackson. It is got a good, they got a good chemistry together.
Well, I'm going to go back to Hijack. So I'm glad you brought that up, but I'm going to come back to it. And here, it's from the opening episode. It's something, if you didn't know, Hijack's on Apple. It's an Apple TV show from Idris Elba. And it has one of the most predictable and ridiculous cliches I've seen in a while. So if you haven't seen it, if you're really trying to protect yourself, probably skip ahead like a minute, because I don't want you to get ruined here. But the entire premise hinders on the fact that the pilot had a fling with a flight attendant. And hey, shit happens. People get horny. I get it. That's not a problem. But so the pilot proceeds to beat the shit out of his lady co-pilot just to hand the plane over to the terrorist that will eventually kill the stupid flight attendant anyway. So I have not been this mad at a TV show in a very long time. It's the dumbest, dumbest, dumbest plot device I've heard in so long.
They didn't kill her.
Huh?
She survives.
Dude, it doesn't matter. You understand, right? Like, it logically, it does not matter. It's the stupid. He basically knows that this is a possibility that the terrorists could hurt the whole plane full of people. And he's like, oh, well, you know what? I'm going to beat the shit out of my co-pilot and unlock the door then. Word.
Oh, then the ending would make you really mad then.
It doesn't matter. I didn't get past the second episode because it's so stupid. The writing's awful. It's just idiotic. There's no reason. Idris Elba should have been shot by, like, you know, episode two, at least.
They explained that.
They explained why they explained that.
They didn't. I finished episode two. He would have been dead already. No, there's nothing to explain.
No.
Don't care. Don't care. It's stupid. He should have never unlocked the door. Stupid.
He's really passionate about this.
It was, Amanda, it was so idiotic.
It's almost like he doesn't know how scripts work.
So fracking idiotic. Absolutely idiotic.
The premise for the hijacking and how they get control of the plane is a little bit far-fetched, yes.
A little bit?
Oh, it's far-fetched.
But the why he can't get shot is actually explained, and it's actually pretty amazing how it gets explained.
Yes.
I just want to point out, he was well aware she was already there when they first said that we took over the plane, and I'm not opening that door. Can't open that door. It's against policy. He already knew she was there. Then all of a sudden, he's like, well, I'm going to take care of your flight attendant friend. Let me start pounding on my co-pilot so I can open this door.
The reason why he can't be shot would actually make you more angry about the entire flight attendant sequence.
I'll never find out. I will never finish that show. I was so mad. Just so dumb. All right. Let's go to the positive. How about the best overall scene and why? Overall, anything, movie, TV, whatever.
So I go with America Ferrera's speech in Barbie, her monologue. And if you haven't seen Barbie yet, it is incredibly moving and powerful. This particular scene where she's talking about what it is to be a woman in a society that resembles our current one. to operate within some confines of like a patriarchy type of environment. And the constant contradictions that exist for women and how narrow the scope is of what it means to be acceptable in society. And I just thought it was such an incredible and powerful moment. And I didn't expect that from her character. So, I mean, that was a nice surprise also, but it just, America Ferrera, she had the perfect way of communicating it where it didn't feel preachy, but it just felt like finally she's able to get this off of her shoulders of how she feels. And collectively, you could hear in the, at least in my audience, like people who got it, who were like, yep, been there. I know how that feels. So I just think that that was like a really incredible moment.
My whole theater was crying. The whole theater.
Mm-hmm.
That was insane. Because I actually, not fun story, but I had to tinkle. And I came back right when she started giving that speech. And so I was sitting because I didn't want to interrupt because it was obviously an emotional moment. So I didn't want to walk in front of people and stuff. And so I got to watch everybody as they started kind of crying and tearing up. And it was really emotional to watch. It was very, very cool. It was a cool moment to observe.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Although it would have been better if like Ryan Gosling would have explained that to you. You know, just to really hammer the point home.
That probably would have been funny and ironic. So it probably could have worked either way. But it was wonderful to hear that from a woman.
I bet she gets a nomination over that scene.
Probably.
Yeah.
Are you done now?
I've been done.
I was pausing. Aaron was going to come up with some other thing to say, so I just wanted to make sure I left space. You know,
That's how conversations work. But I don't know you're not used to that.
To be fair, yeah. Aaron's got things to say about everything tonight.
This is true
because that's how conversations work, John. It's you participate. Go ahead.
Well, I think in the last one, I don't know that there was really conversation. I think there was more yelling and emotion.
Didn't need anybody's opinion on that because it was fucking stupid. But go ahead, Troy. It's up to you.
My best overall scene of the entire summer is the final test of the bomb in Los Alamos in the movie Oppenheimer.
Mm,
that's a good one. That sequence from the time they do the countdown to the time that everybody cheers at the end, that stretch, I don't know how, if it was 1 minute, 2 minutes, 10 minutes or 20 minutes, time stood still for that entire moment. And it was just everything you wanted it to be in the sense of visual spectacle, sound spectacle, acting spectacle, emotional connection. Like it was you and the pillar of fire and nobody else existed in the theater in that moment. And for me, all I had coming across for the very first time, even though I've seen millions of atomic bomb movies over the years, for me, it was the first time I ever sat there and said, oh shit, what did we do to those people in Japan? And just the overwhelming emotional toll that thought took in that moment. Like I just couldn't stop crying. And then all of a sudden, boom, and it was like, holy shit, what just happened? And you forgot that the sound wave hadn't come yet.
That was so well done.
Also, the scene, my runner-up was from that movie, but it was the scene at the very end when you understand what Albert and Oppenheimer were talking about.
Oh, yeah, right at the end of the movie? That's so good.
It's so powerful.
Also shows you how narcissistic Strauss was.
Mm-hmm.
The Trinity test, you know that there's no CGI in that? Like, he did that all practical?
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was all practical. And I will say with that particular scene, it was wild to me how the way that Nolan shot it was, it's supposed to be, like you said, like kind of real time. So you think it's over and it's not over. And then that whoosh comes through and it just makes it so much more intense, I think, for various reasons. Wild.
Definitely.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to go ahead and jump in with mine, which was the one take gun battle and Extraction. I did not think they were going to be able to top the one from the first one, but they completely found a way to top it, even though at one point, Chris Hemsworth is hiding behind a ladder. But...
Oh, is that the prison escape scene? That whole thing where they're okay. That was awesome.
That was awesome. All in one take. And it was just nuts. It does make me laugh that he's hiding behind a ladder.
Okay, I will defend that. He was not hiding behind a ladder. I mean, I get why it looks like that, but he had nowhere else to go.
I get it. Yeah. No, I get it. I just think it's funny.
It is funny. The internet jumped all over that one, for sure.
The internet makes everything stupid, so the internet's dumb.
It needs to attack Hijack more. I will... Sorry.
Show us on the doll where Hijack hurt you.
Yeah, right there. My favorite scene is when... Ryan Gosling as Ken explains why the patriarchy is so cool. I think that was just an awesome scene, and we need more. I'm kidding. That's America Ferrera's her speech.
Good pick.
Yeah, good pick. All right, so best summer vibe. That's the moment or a movie or a series made you feel like, this is summer. This is it.
I go with Mission Impossible. I mean, I feel like those are what we typically look for in our summer movies, just a big blockbuster action flick. But actually, hold on, let me retro that, because I think Mission Impossible, it came out after Fast X. So summer started with Fast X for me, because that was my first big blockbuster action.
Did you see that one in the theater, I assume, then?
I did. Yeah. I did.
Fast X. So fun.
For me, I'm going to have to say Elemental. Because you know it's summer when Pixar drops their movie on Father's Day weekend.
I just knew you were going to say that. That's your thing.
That's my thing.
That's your thing.
It's also probably the last one I'm going to see with my kids at the same time.
Yeah, but that's you're doing dark. Yourself a favor that way.
Because they're getting older. Yeah. They're getting older.
All right. Aww. Moving right along. You know, I'm going to have to say that it's going to be Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. I watched several things before Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, and it was cool. They were nice and everything, but... Mission Impossible just had that fizz. It had that sizzle to it that makes it feel like summer. It had everything going for it as far as a great ensemble cast, great pacing, great story. Everything about it was something that felt like summer to me.
And I would go Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. That was summer to me. Spider-Man is summer to me, and it really made, like, the visuals were popping, and it was very exciting. It was visceral. Everybody was talking about it. It felt like a summer movie. I mean, Guardians, I know that's when summer started, but I didn't feel like summer until Spider-Verse came out. Even Fast X didn't really hit me.
Right.
Really?
Yeah. Not so much like summer, no, for whatever reason. Because I feel like those movies come out whenever. So
that's true. They don't traditionally come out at the same time. I just personally see that's why I can go either direction. But I think Fast X hit me first, where as long as I get a really fun, kind of ridiculous action blockbuster, that's the start of summer.
Fair enough. Hey, it's whatever works for you. Now, how about a waste of your precious summertime? Like that was a waste of my freaking time and I want it back.
So we already know which one's yours.
Can you feel it? Can you feel it coming? It's coming.
I can taste it. I can feel it. I can sense it.
Don't hijack my answer. You know what I'm saying? Like, hold tight.
Don't worry. Mine is just going to piss off John.
Okay. Now I'm excited.
Transformers.
What? You monster. How dare you?
There wasn't, even in the first 30 seconds, I was like, this is not it.
How?
This is not
it. How dare you?
I know. I'm a monster. You, that's fine, but I'm a better one than anything in there.
Of all the trash that came out this summer, you pick on Transformers?
I'm fascinated.
I literally didn't even want to watch it.
Well, then,
I was
that's
over
not fair.
It.
Well,
no, I'm saying, like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, I don't even want to be here experiencing this movie right now.
Jesus.
It felt so boring.
Of all the shit that hit this summer, you're going to be like, Transformers, because it was, you know, Transformers. God
yeah,
damn it.
I'm real sorry about that, though.
You
yeah,
monster.
Sounds like it.
Yes.
I'm just being honest.
Uh-huh. It's, you know... Be a little bit gentle.
I know this is going to hurt our personal relationship, but I just got to
I don't
be,
think we're
going to
ever
open.
Recover.
It's going to transform things from here on out.
Oh, gross.
Oh, God. That made it better.
Almost like you were going to hijack the conversation. It was bad, too.
Right.
Oh, boy, Troy.
This should be no-brainer for everybody, but Secret Invasion.
Yeah, all right. I'm with you.
That is the worst part of summer. Never should have happened. Never should have been made.
So you hated it too? Did you watch the whole thing? Did you make
I watched
it?
15 minutes and I was done.
Wow.
Okay, that's not fair.
I'm the person that gives it a lot of grace. I'm not like Aaron, like one episode and I'm out. Like I at least give it 3. I couldn't make it 15 minutes. I made it through Thor, Love and Thunder more than I made it through Secret Invasion, okay. Which isn't even saying
I'm
a lot.
Sorry.
Because I never finished Thor, Love or Thunder either.
You didn't miss out on anything there. In fact, they're talking about Taika Waititi. Maybe he'll come back for a fifth one. If that happens, I will not be seeing it.
The only reason I watched it was to see Natalie Portman in the costume with the blonde hair, and I saw that, and I was like, okay, I'm good.
John, please say Barbie. Just make Amanda really mad.
No, I'm not going to do that. To
and every woman listening to the podcast.
Also, I didn't go see Barbie yet, so I can't really say
you're
that.
A monster. I at Dang. Least saw
I,
your movie.
I didn't.
What the hell?
I just, hey. You know what? Calm your tits, okay?
You know what? My tits aren't calm
maybe
right now.
You shouldn't go see Barbie if that's what you say.
I'm not going to shit all over your movie because I didn't go see it. That's just what I'm saying. I didn't go see it. The movie I am going to shit all over is The Flash. I wanted something so much better than that. It's every single bit of that movie was, let's spend as much money as possible to get this done fast. We don't give a shit if it was done right. And... it didn't make sense. How do we have a hero go from being the inept hero at the beginning, and then he's going to be coaching the dumb version of himself in the whole movie, and then we're going to have two Ezra Millers at the same time? That's too many Ezra Millers. That's too many Ezra Millers.
It's a lot of Ezra.
It was way too much Ezra. It was not enough charm or fun or anything else to it. Fucking Michael Keaton couldn't even save that goddamn movie. The closest thing
he tried.
He tried. Yeah. Michael Keaton and Sasha Kiley were both very close to saving that movie, but not that close. Like, it's dumb. It was bad. I wanted to like it so much and I was looking forward to it so much. No.
Wow. I'm Hijack. Yeah, it's Hijack. Spoiler alert, it's Hijack. That show sucks. Okay, moving on.
Boy, had no idea that was coming.
I'm glad I masked it well. All right, on the flip side, how about a property you want to see become a franchise or a continued series?
All right, I got you. Mm-hmm. I think only Aaron's going to get this.
Okay.
Heart of Stone.
I'm with you. Yeah, I'm
yeah.
with you.
Sure. Good pick.
Gal Gadot.
I mean, truly spy. Anything with her, but...
No, but she was so good at that. She really was.
Yeah.
This will be a surprise, but Hijack.
What? You want to see more
you're
of this?
Dead.
I've just,
he's
I've,
he's
I'm
murdering
just
you.
Kidding.
Oh my God.
I'm kidding.
I'm not going to murder you, you have bad taste. Troy's got
just,
a lot of bad
I
taste.
I just wanted to see Aaron's reaction, that's all.
I love Idris
Elba. He was mostly confused. Like, how did you get 1 + 1 = 12?
Give me more Luther or something, but never Hijack again. Never.
No, mine would be Silo.
Mm, you guys really You and John both love that show. I haven't watched that one yet.
Yeah, speaking of Silo, I'm going to go ahead and back that up. I want to see more of Silo. I would like to see an expanded universe of Silo of sorts. So we're not just following Rebecca Ferguson into the ground, which I would follow her anywhere, but still, yeah, Silo.
Can I ask a question on Silo?
Mm-hmm.
The first season, does it end on a massive cliffhanger, or do you feel like you get some resolution? Because I'm kind of tired of watching shows where there's a massive cliffhanger.
It's a cliffhanger.
I'll let John give his answer first.
It's a cliffhanger.
I say that it can stand alone.
It can.
But it opens up the world for a whole lot of possible new stories. Yeah.
There's a giant hint that there's a whole lot of more story out there, but it can stand alone. But it's
like Westworld in that way, Aaron.
Right.
Mm. That's the best way I can say it.
Okay, now I'm intrigued. There you go. All right. Mine is Ted Lasso, because they have said
that's a good one.
That Ted Lasso ended, right? Season 3 ended, but there are so many different ways they can go from there. They, you know, and I don't want to, because I'm sure some people probably have not finished the show, you know, it didn't end too long ago, but it ends. It's a very comfortable, satisfying ending, but also leaves it where I could see it going other places, and I would love for it to go those other places. So there you go. Okay. Best villain.
All right. Bear with me.
Okay.
Through this. Okay. I'm going with the villain, and this is like a deep philosophical thing. Time from The Flash. Time.
Shut up.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Time is what costs. It gives him all of his, it gives him great things, his ability to move through it. But it also is what helps take away some of the most precious things to him.
Okay.
To this character. So I'm going with time.
Wow.
It was a villain to The Flash.
I swear to Christ, that sounds like a Troy answer.
It really does. And that's
okay, I take offense to that.
I wouldn't normally just tell you to shut up because like
I was
that,
actually, but. I was confused by your answer. I was like, what are you talking about?
You should understand it. It feels like it's speaking to your core.
Time is a constant.
God, there had to be a Lost reference, of course.
Mine is, of course, Lewis Strauss from Oppenheimer. RDJ, hands down, Oscar all the way around.
He's going to be going up against Ryan Gosling, man. I feel like that's going to be the twosome.
I think he had a better performance than Ryan Gosling.
Much better performance than Ryan Gosling.
We'll have that debate shortly, won't we?
Ryan Gosling is fun. He's interesting and entertaining, but it's not Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are those people that still vote that way in the Academy, unfortunately.
That's too bad.
That's why Ryan will never win.
Same people that didn't vote for Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder.
Because Tropic Thunder again was a comedy and not art, right?
Much better performance than anything that won,
right?
John, mm-hmm. What do you got?
Jason Momoa is Dante in Fast X.
Co-signed.
How can you choose any? I mean, how can you even go with that bullshit answer of like time when you got Jason Momoa running around being amazing?
Because he was ridiculous.
The awesome. Whole movie was ridiculous. The one thing I bought was Jason Momoa being that fucking psychopath.
When he's like sitting down and having a whole like fingernail painting party with corpses?
Yes.
That's amazing.
That is hilarious. That's hilarious.
Amazing. And he's so
effeminate. Just feel like it's Jason Momoa.
It's so awesome.
It's amazing.
Oh my God. He's just rocking like the
they're both
dad bod. He doesn't even try to work out anymore. He just doesn't care.
He's painting his nails. He's good.
It's awesome. I love it. That's my pick too. So I'm with you 100%.
But that dad bod is still in better shape than you or I. Yeah. So.
Thanks for throwing me into there. I was assuming you were just going with yourself. But
Nope. I'm going to take you with me, bitch.
All right. How about best summer find, TV series or movie you found this summer but released earlier or whatever, but something you found this summer?
So there was a movie that I caught, a documentary called The River Runner. I shouldn't say that I got into kayaking, but I've been getting into kayaking recently.
Okay.
And so I just wanted to watch something kind of related to that, more from like a learning perspective. And what I got out of The River Runner is this very scary but somewhat inspiring story of this person and their team, their group, following them as they try to move through some of the there's like four different rivers that they're trying to do where they all connect, and it's very ferocious and intense, and people die from it. And so the documentary is like following the path of all of that and trying to get to that end result. And there's a lot of like kind of overcoming your fears and your barriers and all of that. And so it was a really cool documentary on Netflixio.
Nice. Troy?
I watched this little ditty called Justified. Some old TV show that was on FX at one point in time. That's actually not my that's actually not my find. I did watch three episodes as mentioned earlier. But I did find Invasion on Apple TV Plus.
Oh, really?
Because the second season is about to start. So I did start following that up after Hijack, and Invasion's actually pretty decent. A little slow. You know, it's got I call it the Americans flair, where there's enough to keep you interested. And then you're like, holy shit, that just happened. And then you keep going and you're like, oh, why did I do another one? I forgot how slow this is. And you're like, holy shit, that just happened.
That sounds a lot like he's complaining that he can't do 2x speed.
Kinda. That's how I feel with Justified too. Like if I was on Netflix, I'd be watching Justified much more.
Fair point.
So I just started Invasion myself, but that's not my pick. My pick is actually School Spirits. It came out in March. Picked it up in May and started watching it, and I happened to really enjoy that whole story, and the twist at the end was worth the trip.
Yeah, I did 20 minutes of that. I couldn't do it.
I can't remember. I know that the second season came out in June, but I swear I watched the first season in like May or something. But Joe Pickett. Maybe it was before then and I just have time messed up, but that would be my pick because I really, really love that show. It's about a, what's the best way to explain it? It's kind of like a Justified-y show a little bit. But not really. It's on Paramount Plus and it's about he's a game warden. That's what it is. I guess it's his official title. I couldn't decide if it was a park ranger. It's a game warden. He's a game warden, and he ends up getting kind of like caught, brought into this murder conspiracy. And each season is like its own case. I mean, it's very serialized in that nature. And he's got a very close relationship with his wife. And I just love it. And I've caught up on it now. And I'm caught up on season two now. And it continues to be a show that I absolutely adore. So I can't wait for another season of it. And it's a very low key, and he's not like tough. He's actually very normal, but he just has a very strong sense of what's right, and he will always do what he thinks is right. He's got a great relationship with his kids. It's really good show. Really, really dig it. So Joe Pickett, that'd be my pick. Patreon, by the way, I want to mention our show is independently funded. We're taking off for a couple of weeks, but we will have bonus episodes on Patreon. There'll be a bonus episode. There's already a Bad Movie Night episode at Patreon for Suicide Squad. Why not? Why not? We talked about the Joker. Why not? You can support the show if you'd like to at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Now we're going to break these into TV and film. So now we're going to do TV first and then film. We'll start with TV. Best Supporting Performance. Same order. Best Supporting Performance TV.
This felt like an easy one for me.
Did it?
It's, yes. From Only Murders in the Building, Ms. Meryl Streep.
That's good.
She is, oh my gosh. Well, I mean, we all love Meryl. Everybody should love Meryl. But she is so interesting as a character in this movie. Very unexpected take on it. And she's so entertaining and engaging. Oh my God. I love her.
You can't go wrong with Meryl Streep.
Mine is going to be Tim Robbins from Silo. Just very well played in how he progressed in his political stauntness of the operations.
Tim Robbins, huh? I haven't seen him in anything in a long time. I really got to watch Silo.
Yeah, he was really great in that. Mine's going to be Stephanie Beatrice in Twisted Metal. She was a lot of fun. She was.
She's really good.
Yeah, she's so much fun. She's great. She's strong, powerful, all that thing. She's great.
That's fun.
I've been wanting to check out Twisted Metal. I've heard it's a really great show with the caveat that Will Arnett is not.
It's not Will Arnett that's the problem.
Well, I've heard a lot of people complain about Will Arnett's voice, man.
Like, all right, maybe. A lot.
I haven't gotten far enough to where I've heard the voice yet.
So people seem to do that a lot about Will Arnett and his voice.
Ouch. Are you hanging out with Will Arnett haters?
All right. I like his voice.
Yeah, I like Will Arnett. Mine is going to be, and see if you know who he is, Phil Dunster. Anyone?
Oh, Phil Dunphy.
Nope. Phil? No. Jamie Tart from Ted Lasso. Jamie Tart.
Oh!
Yes, because I got to say, that's a character I absolutely hated. Like, I couldn't stand him. I was super annoyed with him. Love Roy Kent, but I couldn't stand him. And in season 3, they finally have done the impossible, and he won me over, like, completely.
Wow.
I really, really kind of adored him by the end of season 3.
You know, they have a Step Brothers-themed shirt of Jamie and Roy.
Dude,
where, like, the hand on the shoulder.
Of course they do. Of course they do. And I can't even understand half of what Jamie Tart says. I always have to have subtitles on when he talks, but I don't care. Very impressed. They won me over. Very impressed.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Best lead performance. There you go. Bam. Best lead.
All right. So I'm playing a little bit with the rules here, but I'm going to go with Love and Death from Elizabeth Olsen. Hey, the first episode premiered on April 27th, but they released multiple.
No, you're fine. As long as they had a new episode in the summer, that counts.
Mm-hmm, yep. It counts. But she had such a magnificent performance. Have you guys watched it? Did you guys ever finish Love and Death?
I did not.
I didn't finish it because I never started it.
You guys should give it a go sometime. It starts off a little bit slow because it's giving you the context and the background of the relationship, but then it really, really amps up. And there are some phenomenal performances in here. And Elizabeth Olsen, for me, has had one of the best of the year.
I think John will probably ride my coattails on this one as well. But Rebecca Ferguson in Silo is hands down captivating.
Yep.
For the summer.
I am going to co-sign that. She was amazing.
Wow. I mean, it is her year in general between Mission Impossible and Dune and Silo and everything else, but
it doesn't hurt. You guys have had a crush on her for like ever.
Yeah, though. No, not at all. I couldn't possibly
did
be
you
anything.
See her in The Greatest Showman? I mean, come on. She was the Swedish Nightingale.
It's true. Even though it wasn't her voice. My pick is, I mean, probably no big surprise, but Timothy Oliphant from Justified City Primeval. Mm. And a lot of that comes from how really effectively I think he plays with his boiling anger. There is a scene in the second episode. I think it's probably the second episode. So I won't spoil anything, but there's a scene where he comes face to face with a person who is threatening someone he cares about. And there's a moment where he's playing it, because in this show, Raylan Givens is always very, very cool, but he's also simmering with rage underneath, and he always just tries to bury it. Well, there's a moment that the villain does something that provokes, that he knows is directly threatening someone he cares about, and just Timothy Oliphant's face goes from zero to, I'm going to fucking murder you, in about 3 seconds, and it's probably my favorite actual reaction from Raylan Givens in the entire series. It was so impressive. I'm like, I understood everything he just did and why he did it. Like everything in his face, I understood. And it was just so beautifully handled.
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty close for me, but for it was almost tied for best lead performance, but he eked it out with that one. All right. Top 5 TV shows. Go.
All right. Well, I've only seen 2 shows that qualify.
Jesus Christ.
So I have Only Murders and I have Love and Death.
Okay.
But what I'll add to that is I want to watch Twisted Metal and Silo and all of these great shows you guys have been talking about. And I can almost guarantee that Justified will make my list once I get a chance to watch it.
I mean, really, if you only watch 3 more things, it'll definitely make your list. So.
Yeah, that's true. Unless it sucks. I'm not going to put something on there even if I watched it if I don't like it.
I'm not convinced at this point.
I'm just low on the TV shows, guys.
Okay, 5-1. Mm-hmm. I will put as an honorable mention because it hasn't actually aired yet at the time of the recording.
So now you're going six? You can't even get it to five?
Well, I have five, but this one...
Amanda can't get to three. You can't get to five.
I can get to five. I'm just saying that this one would be on the list. This one would be on the list by default because of what it is. And that's Ahsoka because it's starting by the time you're listening to this podcast.
Okay.
But because it's not actually aired at the time of recording, I'll say Blacklist at number five.
Really? Wait. You can't go any further. Why? It sucked. Even with the bull, you let it be there. Even with the bull,
I'm forgiving of the bull. The more I sit with it, but okay. The episodes right before the bull were actually really good.
All right,
the last three or so, right? The room from the room 417 or whatever it was forward, where he's like dismantling everything. I like those were great episodes.
Okay,
I enjoyed those. Hijack at number four.
Oh my god.
The Walking Dead, Dead City, number three.
I do want to see that. That's worth watching then. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I really was like, how are they going to do this? And then like, it's actually really good. Like it was only six episodes, but it was really good.
That helps.
Only Murders season three, mm-hmm. obviously. And Silo is the number one for the summer.
Good list.
So my list is going to be pretty much the same direction as Troy, 5-1. Lincoln Lawyer season two. I had a lot of fun with it.
Before you move on, Case, it's a whole new case, right?
I haven't watched that one yet. There's some hints of the case from that ended the first season. Not the case with the rich guy from the first season, but the case that he was trying to get redone, or the one that drove him to become an alcoholic or drug addict.
Sure.
So there's some of that, but it's a whole new case, and that whole new case ends by the end of the season.
Okay, cool.
Witcher season three, I've been having fun with it. The Griffin, which is a Scandi import that's on Amazon. Once I got past all the dubbing, I had a lot of fun with the mythos
building. What's it about?
It's about a family who has these powers of being able to see this other world, and they can travel back and forth. And this kid is who thought he was crazy, and his father was crazy, and his brother is crazy, discovers that it's all real, and he is taking his friends back and forth to help him do this whole fight with a creature that's called the Griffin. It's an evil creature, too, so it's pretty cool. Twisted Metal for number two, and Silo for number one.
Really that good?
Yeah, it really is.
Just the Metal is really that good.
I watched one episode, so I haven't seen any more than that, but Anthony Mackie was super funny.
Yes, he's charming throughout the whole thing.
He's ridiculous.
He's very hit or miss for me, though.
Well, here's why I like how he plays the character, right? He plays this guy who's basically alone all the time. He's desperate for friends, so he makes a lot of bad jokes that are still funny, but they're kind of like almost sad because you can tell a lot of these jokes because he's, and that's how he plays it. And I think for the first half of the episode, I'm like, well, he's really playing this weird, like almost really cheesy. And then I started to catch on. I'm like, wait a minute. He's playing it like a guy who's just alone in his head all the time. He thinks the shit's way funnier than it is. Now I get it.
Oh, I can relate to that.
And I think that I did too. I think everybody can. And that's why he really started to grow on me by the end of the episode. Cool. My list 5-1. Number five is based on a true story. That's on Peacock. I only just watched this, man, but I freaking loved it. And it's Kaylee Cuoco and Chris Messina are basically this married couple. She's pregnant, who stumble upon a serial killer. They have a friend, and they realize that their friend is actually a serial killer. And instead of turning him in, they decide to blackmail him into doing a podcast because they're desperate to make money. And they know that if they can sit down with a real uncaptured serial killer, it would be a huge internet sensation. And so they do. And Tom Bateman is a serial killer. He's really, really fun. And also, you can't trust the serial killer. So there's a lot of fun twists in it. And they're only like half hour episodes. I loved it. I had a really good time. It's on Peacock. Number four is Only Murders in the Building season three, Meryl Streep. My God, she sings a lullaby and I almost cried. She's just wonderful. And Paul Rudd should not be unappreciated either. Number three, Justified, City Primeval. I love Justified. I'm glad to see it back. It's a lot different than the Justified that went off the air. It's a different, they're doing it a kind of a different way. It's more serialized and just overall different, but I still like it a lot. And Ted Lasso is number two, really stuck the landing, kind of surprised that they stuck the landing as well as they did. It was definitely a great series ender. And number one is Warrior. Warrior is the best thing I watched on TV this year. I freaking love Warrior. And man, yeah, I just can't say enough about the show. It's dramatic. There's a lot of twists. The action is great. The storytelling is great. It's really just fun to watch, and you just don't know where things are going to go. And it definitely ended in a place I didn't expect it to. So that's very cool. All right, movies. Let's go to movies. Amanda, best supporting performance. Who you got, and why is it Ryan Gosling?
It isn't Ryan Gosling, actually. It is Emily Blunt from Oppenheimer.
Mm.
She was phenomenal. And
she was.
Oh, my gosh. A lot of emotional scenes for her. And I just loved her character, even though like there was part of her character that we didn't like. Like, she had flaws as an individual, which is perfectly fine, but you can still empathize with her and understand why she feels the way she feels, and you get drawn into her mindset. And Emily's portrayal on her face, you know, we were talking about it earlier with that sex scene, you fully understand every inch of what that character is supposed to be emoting because of Emily.
I can understand that. I don't agree with it, but I understand it.
Okay.
Her explanation or the choice?
The choice. Because it was obviously Ryan Gosling. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I agree with Amanda. It's Emily Blunt. However,
now, bitch?
Over Robert Downey Jr. in the same movie?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. All right.
And it's because of most of what Amanda said. I don't understand the point that Amanda made about she had challenges to overcome and wasn't pseudo great. She was freaking amazing and a rock the entire time.
She was getting really drunk while her kids in the other room crying. So
because she didn't want the pregnancy.
You ever had kids?
And she had postpartum depression.
I understand. But I'm saying she was a flawed character. She still had things that we as an audience are going to.
She was a mother who just had a kid she didn't want that had to raise on her own because her husband wasn't home and screwing somebody else, had postpartum depression, and was literally acting the shit out of it. That's not a troubled person. She's like stating facts of a 1940s wife.
She still made decisions.
Everybody was an alcoholic.
That which is fair.
They're like, thank God we're finally out of the depression. We could party now.
Troy just did a raise the roof, by the way. You couldn't see it.
Also, go communism in the 40s, right?
And another raise the roof.
But yeah, Emily Blunt just nailed every single scene she was in that movie. And my favorite one
just
was
not her husband.
Yeah. Zinga.
Well done. The scene when finds out that maybe this is a spoiler, but Oppenheimer loses someone dear to him. And she literally finds him out in the forest and is like, smacks him across the face. And he's like, you don't have time to be at a pity party. There's people counting on you. Get the frick back to work. And I was like, damn, you tell them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you got to do sometimes, man.
Yeah. But yeah, Emily Blunt steals the show for sure.
Yeah, for me, I'm going to go with Jason Momoa and Fast X again. I know it's a...
Dear Lord.
Did you watch anything else?
This is just a man crush.
No, I love it. I think it's a great pick.
Yeah,
good choice.
I just loved his role that much. He was so much fun. He made that movie watchable. So it's totally him.
Yeah. My pick is Knuff. I'm just going to say it's Ryan Gosling. There's nobody even close in my book. Robert Downey Jr. might be close, and I'm sure he'll be in the Oscar conversation, but I don't have to pick based on dramatic fare. I have to pick based on who was the most enticing, exciting, interesting, supporting character of the entire summer. And it was Ryan. I have no one close to this. Ryan Gosling made me laugh like I haven't laughed in a long time. I respect the hell out of a guy because, you know, it's very Tropic Thunder-esque because he's willing to put himself out on a limb and just be seen as the most ridiculous component of a movie that's already kind of, I mean, thematically a kind of a ridiculous concept, and he puts himself way out on the edge and just rolls with it. and I freaking loved him. And he was more of the talk of the Barbie movie than the Barbies were a great portion of the summer. I think that tells a lot about how Ryan Gosling delivered. There you go.
Okay. All right.
That's what I got. Now, how about best lead performance? Overall, best lead performance.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy. Margot Robbie for Barbie.
Why? Why Margot Robbie?
Why not? Give me one good reason why not.
Well, I can give you one, but that's my pick, so I'm going to wait until my turn.
No, I mean, I think she just had such a compelling performance. She's going through a dynamic character who has a range of emotions. The scene where she realizes not everyone is her friend, I guess is what I'll say. There are so many moments where she broke my heart because you could connect and relate with her so well.
She has, I can't remember exactly how the joke goes, but somebody calls her a fascist or something, and she goes, and I can't control the flow of commerce or something like that. I can't remember exactly how it was, but it was so perfectly delivered. It was such a clever joke, but perfectly delivered.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And then she has that inspiring and courageous and, you know, all of those different demeanors that she's portraying.
Hey, I'm not arguing with your choice. That's a good choice.
Okay, good.
Just not mine.
Yeah, I would hand it to Margot if Margot had some kind of arc where she has the realization and she delivers the America Ferrera speech. But because America Ferrera delivers the speech instead of her, it kind of like kills the best actor award for me. Because it's more of an ensemble cast where Cillian Murphy just... Cillian Murphy just steals it, hands down. I mean...
Great choice also.
Like, he envisions Oppenheimer the entire movie.
Sure, if you want to join the patriarchy and pick the dude, whatever.
Hey, I'm just saying.
Just kidding.
Went with a man from the 40s over a progressive female. Wow. I mean, that's, here we are again.
I went with a communist man. It's even worse.
You went with a communist. You did.
No, but he is just amazing in that movie and really poured his heart and soul into it because he's always been like a supporting actor in most of Nolan's work. Mm-hmm. So to see him like come up to the front of the line, that's the one I'm looking for. I feel like John now. The front of the line and then just kill it in the scene with Albert Einstein at the end is just chef's kiss. It's so good.
Good pick.
So my pick's going to be John Boyega from They Clone Tyrone.
I was worried it was going to be Jason Momoa again.
He could be the
somehow his other personality right? is in the lead.
You know, I could try to pull an Amanda and do the gymnastics it takes to explain that one, but
hey, screw off, buddy.
Best supporting actor. It was time.
Yeah. So yeah, John Boyega in They Clone Tyrone, he completely disappears in the role. You can't even compare it to any other role that he's really done before. There's heart to it. There's a little bit of comedy to it. There's a lot of weirdness to it. So yeah, that's going to be my pick.
Can you explain They Clone Tyrone? Is it making fun of a genre?
It's a black exploitation movie.
Is that what it is then?
It's a black
because the trailer kind of had me looking at different ways that it could go, I guess.
Yeah. No, I get it. It's totally a black exploitation throwback.
All right. My best lead performance is Cillian Murphy from Oppenheimer. It's just not my favorite movie of the summer. But there's just something about how layered and detailed and how much he put himself through for that performance. It's really, really. I mean, come Oscar time, if he's not in the top two conversation, I don't know what's happening over there. Like, really.
I would agree with that for sure.
So,
if they hand out Oscars at all.
they'll still hand them out, man. They're not giving
out.
They'll hand them out. They're throwing out coins.
In the middle of South by Southwest.
they'll have it settled by then. All right. Top five movies. Now, your top five movies of the summer. Go.
All right. These are not in... Actually, no. I'll do them in order. So number one, Oppenheimer. Number two, Barbie. Number three, Fast X. Number four, Indy. And number five, I'm going to leave this space open for right now because I haven't seen Blue Beetle yet, but I fully anticipate that I'm going to love it from everything that I'm hearing.
And if you don't, what would be in the spot?
I don't know. Probably Guardians. I was not as pleased with Spider-Verse as I was the first one.
Because it was a cliffhanger?
That, and it just felt like it felt so long. It felt so long.
It was too long.
Yeah.
There's a reason why it's not in my top five. Same reason. And I had a lot of fun with it. It just wasn't in my top five.
Yeah.
All right. Well, number five, because people like the drama, Amanda, go 5-1.
Well, my five was left open-ended. That was your drama.
I'm going to put a movie in that I haven't seen because I heard from other people that it might be.
No. I said I'm leaving it open. I'm leaving it open because I feel like that one will probably end up landing there.
Well, I think the drama was the fact that Oppenheimer beat out Barbie. I think that's the drama for your list.
Maybe.
Indy was at number five. Thoroughly a good time. No hard feelings. J-Law was hysterical. Laughed my ass off the entire time. It was so good. And I love the heartfeltness of it at the end. It was like perfect kind of rom-comish type movie. Hit all the numbers, hit all the notes. Barbie at number three. Spider-Verse is at number two. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Didn't feel like it was long at all because it was just an ADD overdrive nightmarish fun that just nonstop. Like you did not breathe the entire time. And I kind of liked the cliffhanger at the end. I looked forward to something. And number one, obviously, is Oppenheimer.
I don't know how to order these. Maybe this is 5-1, but here we go. Insidious, The Red Door is my number five. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning is my number four. Guardians of the Galaxy coming in at number three. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I get what everyone's saying as far as like it felt too long. I think part of the reason why it feels too long is it's all build up. No, it's all like reaching the apex. No coming down from it. And that's a little frustrating. But otherwise, I still love the movie. And then my number one is going to be Blue Beetle.
Number one, huh?
Yep. Wow.
It is my
I really loved
one.
That one.
I huh? really did love it. It did everything right. It's a great, great, great comic book movie. And the feeling of family was something that I really enjoyed. It was really refreshing compared to a lot of this other stuff that we were been getting from both DC and Marvel.
I had somebody said that they saw Blue Beetle and the humor was too loud.
The humor was too loud,
and I'm like, you have never been around a Latino family if you don't get that. That's really kind of pretty standard. Would you agree, John?
Totally agree with that. I mean, everything.
Yeah, I just thought it was hysterical. I'm like, yeah, you should come with me. I'll take you to some family reunion stuff. So. All right. My top five. Number five is The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster. I really love that reinvention of the Frankenstein motif. I thought that was really clever, and I wish more people would find that one. Number four is Barbie. It just really took me by surprise. I thought I would like it. I did not think I would love it. I ended up loving it. So that's, and apparently there's a lot of people out there that just, you know, guys that don't want to admit that they went and saw Barbie. I don't understand that. I mean, kind of embrace your feminist side. I don't know. I mean, it's just a good movie. It's not a preachy movie. I don't think it's meant that way. It's got a good story and a good heart. It's a good movie. Number three, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Horribly disappointed that this movie didn't do better because this is the way I wanted my Indiana Jones to end with Crystal Skull. And I finally got that retconned, which made me happy as a fan of that series. Number two, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part One. I'm stunned that even made my top five because honestly, I don't know if any of the other Mission Impossible movies would have, but that movie from start to finish is nonstop thrill. Like it is so well done. So well done. And the last section of the film, which is basically a train chase, is Uncharted 2 just reimagined via blockbuster cinema. It's just so well done. And my number one movie of the summer, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I mean, I don't think we talked about it enough so much, but I mean, the fact that Rocket Raccoon is just one of the best characters in the Marvel Universe is amazing to me because he's CGI and he's voiced by Bradley Cooper acting as an angry little rat. But beautiful story, beautiful send-off for James Gunn. It gives me hope for whatever comes next in the DCU, but that is a great movie, and my God, did Marvel need it, because Marvel has sucked as of late for me.
I'd agree with your assessment there. I just surprised it's your number one.
That's my number one. I don't know what to tell you. Is my list wrong?
It was fun. No, it was fun. It was good.
It was great.
It wasn't wow.
Yeah, I disagree. I think it was wow. And it was a little bit more wow than Dead Reckoning Part 1. And I will say, you know what's funny? You guys talked about the Part 1, Part 2, and oh, that's why Spider-Verse. No, it has nothing to do with that. It's just I got bored after a while. And I'm like, is this thing over yet? And it just went on too long. It just went on too long. Keep in mind, don't love animated films as much as you guys either. But I love the first one. I just like the second one.
And the second one didn't have Rebecca Ferguson in it, which Mission Impossible did. So,
and Hayley Atwell. Trust me, I'm much more a Hayley Atwell guy. So
this is true. You are.
Yeah.
Peggy Carter forever.
Oh, my God, Jake. Oof. That's it. Anything else about summer you guys want to talk about? You want to talk about how Amanda couldn't come up with five? We want to make fun of her at all for that? We can do that.
Hey, it was hard initially, and then I totally forgot about it on the TV side that Ted Lasso would have technically counted. But I did not watch a lot of TV this summer, I have to say.
Do you think Ted Lasso stuck the landing?
Yeah, it was good. Okay. All three seasons were great. John should watch it.
I love that directive.
I love that John just flipped us off as if this is a visual medium.
It was just for Troy. Yeah, That's all he cares about.
It was a secret handshake.
We're very animated people, John. We understand.
Right.
Great. Yeah. Great.
Troy's pumping raising the ceiling again.
My God. This is...
Pumping the ceiling. I don't know what I'm saying.
That's not a thing, Amanda. That's just not a thing.
I'm so tired.
It'd be more like two-handed, like pushing down to get the air to go up.
No, it sounds weird.
What is happening right now?
I don't know,
well,
but we're done.
Well, it looked weirder.
We're done.
It looked weirder.
We're done. We're done for the summer. This is it for the summer. Our podcast is done for the rest of the summer. Share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, or on X or Threads or wherever. Please share the show if you like the show. Share it with your friends so that they can find it and hopefully come to enjoy it. And please rate and subscribe on your preferred podcast app. Whatever app you listen to us on, please rate and subscribe there. And we're at thehollywoodoutsider.com once again. That's it.
If you don't like the show either, please share it, because then you can say, like, listen to these idiots talk about this stuff. They're stupid.
It's the best way to share it. Share it like that. Listen to these idiots.
And lady.
Didn't Barbie teach us that we're like equal opportunity? Idiots across the board. It's just, we're all idiots.
Idiots is gender neutral.
The problem is separation. We got to stop separating things. Just all collective. We're all idiots.
Aaron,
together.
You got to keep them separated.
Oh my God.
God, that's it. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn and make Barbie buy her own, because that's how we get past the patriarchy.
Damn, Skippy.
Or go get your own. And she'll keep hers.
She's got to buy hers first.